นะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะพุทธังธัมมังสังฆังนะมาสามิ
This evening, I'd like to say a few words about speech and right speech, wrong speech, different kinds of speech. it's a characteristic, leading characteristic of our school of Buddhism that. We put great store on, we lay great emphasis on the interdependent nature of the different aspects of the path and how closely linked sila, samadhi, banya are, and that developing any one aspect independently of the others or neglecting any single aspect will have a detrimental effect on the whole. Speech is part of our lives, and it's almost impossible to live without speaking, certainly in a community like this. If you go on a long solitary retreat, you can do it, but few people are interested in or indeed able to live completely solitary lives throughout their monkhood. And there are occasions where the Buddha actually criticized monks who kept silent. The occasion that readily comes to mind is that of monks who spent pansa together and all made a resolution not to speak with each other, and the Buddha roundly condemned them afterwards. It wasn't the correct way to live together as a monastic community. So although we may take periods of time to dwell in silence and learn about silence, and as a way of stilling the mind and as a way of developing some perspective on our speech patterns, speech habits, it's not considered the ideal way to live together. The ideal way is to develop right speech. And the Buddha, on one occasion, talking about the way to judge whether someone was a wise person or a fool, he said, observe how someone speaks, observe their speech, not over a short time, but over a long period of time, because our defilements, our habits, our attitudes all spill out in the words that we speak over time. So dealing with speech, although it's on the sila level of practice, it's dealing obviously with mental states, mental qualities, because mind is the forerunner of all things, and before we speak, there has to be the intention to speak. It's that intention which is the determinant of whether our speech is wholesome or unwholesome, whether it's good karma or bad karma. The Buddha said, Sila, O monks, is Chaitanya. These two things are one and the same. And so in the Samavaja section of the Eightfold Path, right speech is defined as the intention to refrain from lying, from false speech, the intention to refrain from divisive speech, the intention to refrain from harsh speech, and the intention to refrain from frivolous speech. So that is your guiding intention, and that is the virtue, the inner virtue of Sila that one seeks to develop, the inner quality of restraint and of a conscious refraining from expressing words that are not true or that are harsh, divisive or frivolous. So Sila is both the inner quality of restraint and also its external expression. And the internal virtue can be supported, can be brought into being, can be developed through precepts, through taking on particular standards of speech. And in the monastic community, Buddhist monastic community, standards of speech are extremely high, although perhaps we may say we don't always uphold those standards, or sometimes we slip away from them, but they are definitely there. And it's an interesting exercise, one which I've done on a number of occasions, of going through the Patimokkha rules, 227 Patimokkha rules, and seeing how many of those rules can be broken with speech. The second parajika offense, stealing, cheating, that can be performed with speech. The third one, giving an order for someone to kill someone else, or advising abortion or euthanasia. The fourth one, most directly concerned with speech, falsely claiming supernormal attainments, going on to the Sangati Sesa rules, and then there are rules of speaking lewdly with a woman, inviting her to sexual intercourse, acting as a go-between. These rules involve speech. The rules of getting kutis made in excess of the allowance would also involve speech in giving the orders, giving the consent. Rules of falsely accusing monks of serious offences, creating a schism in the Sangha, and being stubborn. Almost every rule that we can find in the Patimokkha, there is concern with speech in one way or another. And so those rules, if we keep them well, are restricting, preventing defilements from manifesting as kama in the external world. They remain the mental level, and remaining on the mental level, we have a chance to see them for what they are and to endure through them, and ideally to let them go completely through seeing their impermanent and conditioned nature. So the speech, perhaps more than anything else, contributes to the overall atmosphere in a community. The quality of speech has a great effect on our minds, and its central sense of well-being, or the sense of living in a in a safe and supportive atmosphere or living in a hostile and atmosphere, and everyone's just out for themselves, and where people use those around them in order to express or vent their frustrations. And as monks and as monastics, having given up the more usual conventional ways of letting off steam and venting frustrations, we don't have drink and drugs and movies and enjoy and sensual outlets to express our sensuality that way. We're restricting it very much, and similarly with anger and negativity, we don't hurt, maim, oppress physically. But it does mean that if there is anger manifesting, then there is an opportunity for it to be expressed verbally, and this is something we really have to keep tabs on, be very mindful of. So there can be a lot of aggression and anger which finds its way out through our mouths and in the words that we say, and perhaps not in the, such a gross way as might be met in the world, but certainly it is recognizably coming from a defiled mental state. And as monks then, and monastics then, we should always recollect that our goal is excellence, excellence in every aspect of our life. So we want to we're seeking to develop excellence in our speech, for our speech to be a treasure, something that we can be proud of, and something which is really contributes in a positive way to our own life and to the life of those around us. So although sila and the teachings around sila tend to be based tend to be expressed in a predominantly negative idiom, that's mainly for the purposes of precision. But there is also a positive aspect, and to seek to find ways of motivating yourself and inspiring yourself or reflecting on the beauty of right speech and good speech. And when we meet someone, a bhikkhu or someone who's developed right speech, a sense of coolness and gentleness and wisdom, which we see in them, is truly inspiring. And this is an aspect of practice which is beyond nobody. I mean, we may have doubts about whether in this lifetime we can become fully enlightened, or even whether we can realize the higher stages of samatha practice. But really, the development of right speech, difficult though it may be at times, is really something within everyone's grasp. It's an attainable goal for everyone who's reached this level of commitment to spiritual development. But it has to be made a priority, and it's often not given the importance that it should be given. It's considered something kind of auxiliary. The real practice is sitting and walking, and right speech is something, you know, that is just meant just to happen by itself, really. And sometimes it doesn't. And once you get into unwholesome habits and ways of relating to people, then they become really ingrained. And as time goes on, you find it more and more difficult to eradicate them. So if you go through the list of defilements and upakilesas, and then you can see how they express themselves, and the opportunity for dealing with many defilements through restraint of speech is another real stimulus to giving this some real centrality in your practice. And there's a one of the most important defilements is that of we say raising yourself and putting others down in Thai. It's like denigrating others and praising yourself or considering yourself better than someone else. And this is the way that many good qualities that we've possessed become sullied because we attach to them as some kind of achievement. And use them as a refuge to prove to ourselves that, you know, we've done something, we've realized something, and then use them to put down others who we feel don't have reach the same standards as we have. And this can be when this attitude is there, then sooner or later it spills over into speech. So it's almost impossible for your basic underlying wrong thoughts, wrong ways of looking at things, not to come out in the words that you use. We can often fool ourselves or deceive ourselves about defilements that we have in our hearts. But by keeping an eye on speech, then here is something which is much more tangible. It's a tangible expression of these wrong thoughts and attitudes. And here the danger is to say, well, I didn't really mean that, or, you know, it's somehow to dismiss what we've said. But it's right there that we can catch the defilements. Can learn a lot about the way the mind works from the way the speech, from the speech that we use and the way that we relate to others. As some people can be very, very polite and well spoken with their seniors, but speaking quite a different way with those on the same level as them or those below them. And so there the tendency is to the speech to incline towards obsequiousness with superiors and kind of superiority and arrogance with juniors. And this is a danger in a hierarchical system, and one which is, as monks we have to be constantly aware of. And our speech, and the Buddha says that he said that if you're humble or easy to admonish, he said when only when you want something and when you there's something in it for you, then he said then that's not true humility, that's not true amenability, but we should develop these kind of qualities out of our love and respect and devotion to the Dhamma. That's the goal, not to develop things in relation to other people or in relation to our desires, but because of our devotion to Dhamma and our aspiration to realize truth. One of the a few sutta passages that come to mind at this point, talking about the kamma involved in various kinds of wrong speech. And here the Buddha is quite forthright that someone who's addicted to or given over to, habitually given to lying, may well be reborn in a lower realm, in a hell realm, animal realm, or preta realm. But he said, but if one, through other good actions, creates enough good karma to be reborn as a human being, then the karma will express itself as being lied to, or being being criticized unfairly. So this being subject to false accusations, being slandered, this is considered to be the result of karma of lying. And it goes through the other kinds of wrong speech. So someone who's much given to creating divisions between people and delights in setting people at each other's throats, or getting people arguing and enjoying the kind of buzz from that, is someone who, if they are reborn as a human being, will experience separation from those they love, sort of unnatural or premature separation. Someone who speaks harshly will be the subject of harsh speech. Someone who's given to much frivolity, if they are reborn as a human realm, there'll be someone who's rarely believed, their speech has no weight, people don't take them seriously. The Buddha says these are the karmic results. There's another sutta I'm very fond of, and I always think of when I speak about right speech, is the Buddha distinguishes between the sage and the fool in the following way. He says the fool likes to speak about his own good qualities, even if somebody doesn't ask him. He'll boast, he'll blow his own trumpet, he'll want to tell everybody in great detail. As regards his bad qualities, he keeps them quiet, he conceals them. Even if someone asks him directly, he tries to wriggle out of it, or else to answer in a very summary way with many excuses. As regards other people, it's the opposite. Even if nobody asks directly, he likes to talk about the faults of others, and to talk about them in great detail, and often mixed with a great deal of speculation and an exaggeration, we might say. Whereas the good points of other people, they don't want to talk about them at all. Even if certainly wouldn't bring up others' good points by themselves. But even if they're asked about the good qualities of another, then they'll speak in a very short, summary kind of way, and try to temper them with criticisms. Yes, he's or she's very like this, but, and or whatever. These are the qualities of the pala, the fool. The sage, the pundit, he's distinguished. It's a way of telling who's a pundit, who's a wise person, who's a sage, who's a satpurusa. This is someone who will not, very rarely, speak about his own good qualities, even when pressed, let alone without any kind of invitation. if he has to speak about his own good qualities, he speaks about them very simply, shortly, tries to be as concise as he can. Whereas his own faults, he's someone who readily owns up, reveals his faults, his mistakes, willing to speak about them at length, even without being invited. Whereas whereas with other people, it's the opposite again. He likes to point to the good qualities of others and to talk about them at length. He delights in goodness wherever he sees it. Whereas the faults of others, he certainly wouldn't bring them up just in order to gossip or to put somebody down. But even if he's asked for a reasonable purpose to talk about someone else's faults, he does so reluctantly and makes it as short as he can. And he also has buts and tempers the criticism with pointing to good points of that person. This is a characteristic of a sage. Whereas the fool is someone who's always trying to promote himself and push himself and be liked and loved and always trying to lift himself up by putting others down. The sage has no need to do that. So the wise person is someone who is mindful of their speech. Their speech is true speech. It is speech which is of benefit to the listener. So there are a lot of true facts which are not beneficial to the listener. There's no need to spouting a lot of knowledge just for the sake of it. Again, it's always being aware of intention. Is there an intention to show off, to boast, to exaggerate one's own achievements, accomplishments? Or is there conversely the to put oneself down all the time? And it's again a speech coming from wrong thought. True speech, useful speech, and speech which is uttered at the right time. Right time and right place. It's polite, gentle speech, and it's uttered with metta. There's genuine goodwill towards the person. There's no other intention to put them down, to make them feel unhappy. And these are the five criteria of what we call supasita. True speech, beneficial speech at the right time and place, spoken kindly, with gently, politely, with goodwill. And the Buddha, instructing Rahula, also gave him some good advice here. He said, both before speaking, reflect, is this speech that I'm about to utter, will it lead to my own affliction, to the affliction of the other, or the affliction of both? Is it a kusala? Will it have unpleasant results? If it has, then I will not speak those words. If during the course of a conversation, then there should also be that kind of mindfulness. Perhaps we start off talking about a very wholesome subject, sort of a Dhamma practice, and then it gradually slides into something more worldly, degree by degree, and suddenly we're way off course. And then the Buddha says, during the conversation, that same reflection, whether one's speaking is leading to affliction for oneself, others, is it a kusala? If so, stop there. If it's kusala, it's wholesome speech, then carry on mindfully. If after a conversation is over, there should also be that same kind of reflection. And if one feels that one's spoken in an unskillful, unwholesome way, then reveal that. Don't conceal it. Don't try and explain it away. Don't try just to push it out of your mind. Then the Buddha says, reveal it, or what we may say, confess it, if not to the Ajahn, then to one of our fellows in the holy life, with the intention not to speak in that way in future. That of course is the important point. Otherwise it can just become a cycle where you speak in an unwholesome way and then you say sorry afterwards, and then you feel that you can speak that way again. It's all right because you're going to say sorry afterwards, you know, just then there's no real sense of shame or the real firm and sincere intention not to act in or speak in that unwholesome way again. So the speech and action must be in harmony, and harmony again is a very important principle in monastic life. And it's sometimes said by monks, you know, we're not here to for a kind of a therapeutic group therapy, and we don't have to necessarily all get on with each other, and there's truth to that. But at the same time, it's noticeable how often the Buddha did praise monks who speak in ways which promote harmony and understanding in the group. And he says such a monk, wherever he sees conflict, disharmony, division, and then he seeks to do whatever he can to bring it to an end. And he's someone who delights in harmony and cooperation, and seeks to support and encourage its maintenance and growth in the community. So this is definitely a criteria for us. So the practice is of mindfulness, of restraint, and developing speech which is beautiful and pleasing and beneficial. So knowing the right time and place is over and over again stressed. And there was an occasion where the Buddha, speaking to a Brahmin, he said there's four kinds of people in the world. One first kind of person praises those who deserve praise at the right time, but don't criticize those who should be criticized at the right time. The second kind of person criticizes those who should be criticized, or admonishes those who should be admonished at the correct time, but does not praise those who should be praised at the right time. There's another person who neither praises nor criticizes or admonishes at the right time. And there's another person who both praises and criticizes at the right time. And the Buddha asked the Brahmin, of those four, which do you think is superior? And the Brahmin says, I consider the person who doesn't praise or criticize anyone as being superior because of his faculty of equanimity. And the Buddha says, I don't agree. In the eyes of the Tathagata, the one who's superior is the one who praises and criticizes at the correct time. Why? Because of his faculty of wisdom, of knowing time and place. So it's not just this matter of, you know, just close your eyes to everything and be chochoi, as we say in Thai. It's not what the Buddha recommended. And in a monastic community, then we have this principle of mutual admonishment. Admonishment's not such a good word, is it? But feedback is a modern word, and it's quite a good word actually, as modern words go. And but the whole system of admonishment can only really take root and only really lead to the welfare of a community when there's a sense of trust. And where there's not that, or whether there's in some communities it becomes you don't admonish me and I won't admonish you, so that's one corruption. Another corruption we can see is where those who feel they should admonish don't, because they feel that their admonishment won't be accepted, it'll be rejected, and they may even well be treated harshly or spoken to roughly for their pain. So why bother, you know? Better just to keep quiet, because they don't really want to hear this anyway. The other side is the people who are in the state where they might be admonished. They feel that the people who admonish them put on airs and graces, come across very bossy or arrogant, and don't admonish in a skillful way. So you have a lack of trust there. Both one side, I'm just doing this for the welfare of the person, have a lot of goodwill. And they treat me like this, and then the people are being admonished. So I don't mind admonishment, but when it comes like that, I just can't accept it. So this is something that can very easily occur, and it's something that we all have to guard against. So we're trying to develop this excellence in community. It means looking at ourselves very honestly, both in the way that we express words of admonishment or feedback to others, and our readiness and our ability to receive admonishment, because if you are truly open to admonishment, then you're a very lucky person, because you're going to learn a lot, and you're going to learn very quickly. If you're someone who pays lip service to it, but in fact can't take it, or take it as something very personal, as a personal slight, and feel angered or humiliated by it, then you're shutting yourself off from something very important. Especially in a monastic community, often the abbot, the person at the top of the line, doesn't have that close moment by moment eye on what's happening at the end of the line, and so not always able to give on the spot admonishment or advice. But if you're really open in the correct way, then you can learn from everyone, those people who are around you and with you all the time. So say this is a correct way of using speech. And a skill. It doesn't come easily for most of us, but a skill that's really worth developing, and one that's in fact part of our monastic training. Developing that real sense of of goodwill. And when there's, as I say, when there's a trust there, then that more than anything else is the condition or the foundation on which this can be built. So the really like to encourage all of you to continually looking and at your speech and finding ways to develop it, to refine it, to wear away at the rough edges and the worldly speech, and not just the monks but the novices. I mean, I don't want to ever have to hear any aggressive words and use of four-letter words in this monastery. It's totally inappropriate from anybody here, even those keeping 8 precepts. It really, really hurts me to hear when people are swearing and speaking very coarsely. This is not the marketplace, and really have to be on a much higher level here. So make your speech a treasure. Make it something which is people really love to hear. And when you care for your speech, then it has a weight and a meaning, and it really goes to people's hearts. And they, you know, have you ever spoken something and maybe a long time afterwards somebody's come and said to you, you know what you said to me 2 years ago or something, that really meant so much to me, you know, and I've remembered that ever since. And you know, it's a wonderful feeling, isn't it, if that's ever happened to you, you know, that you've said something which has really gone to somebody's heart and really affected their life in that kind of way, that they've carried it around like a treasure, and the gratitude they feel to you is so tangible and so beautiful. And this is a dana that you can give to others. You can give them a wonderful gift that can benefit them through their whole life. And on the other hand, you can say words that, you know, cut to the heart and which people also carry around for a long, long time. So there's a lot of we have influenced people through our speech, and it's something to take great care of and to polish and shine and make beautiful. So I'd like to offer these reflections to you tonight.